Hey, y'all, I'm Angie M. And I'm an alcoholic. A's my maiden name, that's funny. Thank you, Justin, that was very kind. Y'all, I'm nervous, there's a lot of y'all. But Perry, thank you so much for asking me to speak. I'm incredibly honored to be here and nervous. But I'm going to do my best to do what they told me to do. My sobriety date's May 2nd, 1994. My home group is the Mayberry Group in Mount Airy, North Carolina. Y'all come see us. And I have a sponsor who's very dear to me. I'm supposed to try to tell y'all in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I'm going to do that to the best of my ability. We're going to get done on time, and I won't lie on purpose. And that's all I know right now. I grew up right here in Greensboro, just a few streets that way off of Westridge. My mother still lives there. Beautiful family, incredible people. They tried their best. Bless my mama's heart, she tried so hard. Went to church not far from here. I felt like my family way overdid that church business. And I went until they couldn't make me. But, you know, they tried their best to give me a kind and loving God, to give me access to a kind and loving God. And my mother, and especially my grandmother and my siblings, seemed like they took something tangible home from there and applied it in their lives. And I just felt like I missed that bus. I didn't, you know, I guess I was waiting to be struck with something. It needed to be dramatic to get my attention, I guess. Selfish and self-centered in the extreme from way back, before I ever took a drink. And nothing happened to me that I'm aware of to make me do the things I did, just me and my self-will. Again, beautiful family, wonderful home, all the opportunities I've wanted my children to have. They had me, we were talking, right pulling in, dance classes right behind this church when I was little. I was horrible. You know, sports teams, I mean, all this stuff, you know, but I didn't embrace any of those opportunities. I think I was just so full of self-centered fear. If I can't be the best, I'm not going to try, and I know I can't be, so what's the point? And everybody who does it well is stupid because I was too afraid. Went to school not far from here, and they used to say that Angie has such potential if she'd only apply herself, and I didn't. I was lazy. I know today I was lazy and terrified, absolutely uncomfortable in my own skin. I always think about it when I tell my story. I have an aunt who died as a result of this disease, a grandfather, and my nephew died Sunday from this. It runs rampant. I'm incredibly grateful, and I don't understand why, who, or what, but I just know today I'm sober, and I'm going to try my best to do God's will. So anyway, my parents split up when I was about 9 years old, and that was a lot of fuel for me to get some more attention. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't realize what I was doing when I was doing it, but I do know that there was a girl I went to school with who her parents split up, and her dad, like, broke in mom's house to try to kidnap her because he wanted custody of her so bad. And I remember going, well, nobody's broken in to try to steal me, you know, because they don't care, you know. I mean, just my definition of love was just so ridiculous. Anyway, y'all know the deal. I was uncomfortable in my own skin. There was an older tribe of kids that were in the neighborhood right across the street. And one night I was hanging, they were hanging, they took a drink, I did too. And something happened to me that I don't think happened to them. I felt comfortable in my own skin. I felt okay. I was no longer nervous, afraid, or anxious. I just felt comfortable in my own skin. As a matter of fact, I didn't just feel good. I felt better then. Better than I'd ever felt and better than everybody around me. And that ego grew 10 sizes that day, I guess. Now, from that point on, I did not become a daily drinker. It was not okay in my mother's home for a young girl to be drinking. Wasn't okay for many people to be drinking. However, I sought out the people who would let me drink. I was a very young person, and if you look hard enough, there's people who were sick enough who thought it was cute to let me drink. I thought it was because I was so cool and mature that they wanted to hang out with me. But I know today I was like some little drunk monkey. They were, give her a drink, see what she's going to do. She'll do something stupid, just watch. And I usually didn't disappoint them. Stupid was a special skill. So anyway, I can tell you that I hit the ground running. I sought out every opportunity to drink. I consumed everything that I could to feel comfortable in my own skin, and by the time I was 14 years old, I was put in my first treatment center. I was not there because I hit my bottom, but I hit my mama's bottom. I hit my family's bottom. They were high bottom drinkers, and I wasn't. I was angry. I was so angry that they were trying to control me. I was 14, you know, but I knew everything. So I went to that place. It was in Burlington. It was a locked facility because that's what they do with adolescents who are out of control. And I broke out. And I broke out the first time with some other girl, and we got caught. And we were sitting outside of a Quickie Mart. We called somebody who was sick, too, and was going to come get us, and we had to wait. We didn't know where we were and didn't know how to get there, but we thought they could find us. And so we're sitting there waiting, and the officer pulls up, and the girl said, come on, we got to go. Let's run. There was a chain link fence behind us. She jumped on that fence, climbed up, and just gracefully jumped over and took off running. I mean, it was a beautiful move. She must have gone to all those sports things if her parents. I jumped on that fence and kind of hung there like a cat and couldn't get moving. And so I fell back down, and I got to take my first cop car ride of many. And he took me back to that horrible place where they were trying to help me. But I have to say, I didn't stay there maybe a week. And I built a coalition of the stupid and the willing, and we broke out again and kept going that time. You know, I started just using people up. I used up all the resources of that little group of kids that we took off together, and if they ran out of resources for me and they couldn't do anything else for me, I'd just leave them wherever they were. And that's what I did. Drinking was the most important thing to me because already I knew that there was no reason to try to function without feeling okay. I mean, why in the world would you do that? Alcohol was the most important thing already. Periodically, I would call my mother and ask if she was ready to meet my demands. You know, are you people going to get off my back? And she'd say, Angie, please, just stop. You know, just come home and we'll work it out. If I didn't hear what I wanted to hear, I'd hang up. And that's cruel today. Collectively, my husband and I have 5 daughters, and I don't know what I would have done if any of them were like that. My mother, God bless her, is everybody calls her St. Linda. She's a wonderful woman. But I terrorized her. It was like I was holding me hostage. You know, you do what I want to do, or I'll get it. I promise. I'll show you. I'll hurt me. Just so full of self-will. And I really didn't know I was doing it. I just remember I was so frustrated because nobody understood. Nobody ever understood. I had the worst luck. Nothing ever worked out for me. Nothing's fair. And if you would just do what I want you to do, everything will be fine. How hard is that world, you know? Just perpetually disappointed and angry because I wasn't getting my way. So my father wasn't buying any of this mess. My father said, you know, if you want a better life, you got to do something different. You know, it's all on you. And I thought he was pretty judgmental. He didn't understand. My father also was what I think the Big Book refers to as a heavy drinker. He was able, when alcohol started causing his problems, he was able to put it down and walk away. He was able to drink successfully. And he didn't understand me, and I didn't understand him. For the life of me, I couldn't understand him. And so we butted heads a lot. And the worst thing in the world was for him to be disappointed in me from my point of view. And I kept doing things to disappoint him and thought he was just had it out for me. So my dad didn't understand this thing. He didn't think them sending me to get help was a good plan. He thought maybe I just needed a swift kick and might not be wrong. But I ended up getting plenty of those, and I can tell you that they didn't cure alcoholism. But I had most of them coming, I can promise you that. So moved out 15, 16 because I knew everything and just was running the roads, doing my thing. A lot of sick relationships. If I was in them, they were sick. I would seek out people who were a little sicker than me so I could shine and be the well one. You know, look at Angie trying to help him. She's such a nice girl, you know. And then I would out-sick him, and they'd be like, why is he with her? She is crazy. Just ridiculousness. Got a lot of good jobs, really did. My family hooked me up with a lot of good jobs, and I could go in. They would clean me up, dress me up, and push me in the door, and I could do okay. I had a lot of potential. The people would be really impressed with my willingness and ability to catch on quick, and boy, I'm going to go far and do well, and it would just hit. At some point, not very long into my new job, there's always a new start, but I ended up working in these offices with these nice little women who wore sweater sets, and I got no, sweater sets are awesome, they're beautiful. However, I always worked with these women who made casseroles and wore sweater sets and sent greeting cards. I mean, they were just these really normal women, and I was so intimidated by them. And I would be in there trying to pretend that I was okay in my skin, trying to pretend that I could interact in society and I wasn't crazy, just trying to contain it. And they would walk down the hall and say good morning. I'd think, what does she mean by that? You know, judging me. They're all judging me. Those casserole women. I know today that I was full of fear, guilt, shame, and remorse already. But at the time, I just knew they had it out for me. They didn't understand. So I would leave. I might make it to lunchtime. I might make it 2 weeks. I might make it maybe a month. But at some point, at some time, I would get that feeling that they know what I am. I would just know that they knew what I was on the outside, and there was no way I could clean it up enough on the outside. They knew what I was on the inside, and there was no way I could clean up the outside enough. And once I thought they knew what I was, I'd need to drink. As soon as that fear that goes to the bone would hit, I would have to go drink, and I would just evaporate out of people's lives. And I did that out of a bunch of jobs, and I did that away from a lot of people. My family, they loved me, but I just had to go. When it's time to drink, it's time to go, and I'll see you around. So I did those kinds of things over and over. I said I was always starting over, and again, it was promises, and I meant it when I said it. Most of the time, I promise you, if you'll just help me this time, I'll never do it again. If you guys will just help me get away from him, I'll be fine. And I either find me another him or bring that him with me, whatever, you know. If you'll just help me get another job, if you'll move me over here, if you'll do this, I need another car, whatever it is. If you'll just help me this time, I swear I'm never going to do it again. This time it's going to be different. And I meant it when I said it. But I didn't know how to not drink. And I didn't know... At the time, I didn't know what the problem was. I just knew that nothing was ever right, and I didn't feel okay. So I'm screaming through life. I'm demanding things from everybody. And I finally found, we'll call him Mr. Sick. And I call him that because he was my match. I mean, absolutely the perfect storm of sick was the two of us. Drank just like me. I mean, absolutely crazy. And when we got together, our whole world revolved around drinking. Our whole world revolved around running the roads and our craziness. And we were both incredibly selfish. And, you know, it's just hard to function like that. I violated everything that they taught me to be right and true when I was young. And they did. They taught me some beautiful things, or tried to, but I violated all those things. And I started to really dislike me. And the more I did those things and the more I disliked myself, the more I had to drink. And it was just, I needed to continuously be drunk at that time. So we're fighting and screaming, and somebody's clothes are being set on fire in the front yard. I mean, just all that fun stuff, just craziness, you know. And again, I thought I had the worst luck. I couldn't understand. So we did something brilliant. We had a child. And that was interesting. You know, I can tell you today that God's grace is she's okay, and she's a beautiful, beautiful young woman, and she has a beautiful son, and she's okay. But I drug her around to a lot of places and did a lot of things that were not appropriate. And And I'm not proud of those things, but they're the truth. So I had Stephanie, and they wouldn't let me take her back to where we lived because it was just too rough. So we went to my mother's house. And, you know, this time it was going to be different. Everybody watching my show said, now she's going to get it together. She has this child. You know, she's going to be a good mom. And I really wanted that. I really had a picture of the kind of mother I should be. And it wasn't what I ended up being. It wasn't a sloppy drunk. It wasn't the one who drug her through dangerous places. It wasn't the one who put her own feelings first in front of that child. But I needed to drink. So I would take her to my mother's and dump her off, you know, and I would say it and I meant it. I'll be back in just a couple of hours, you know. If she can just hang out with you, I'll be back in just a little bit. I'm just going to go run a few errands. And I knew I was just going to go knock the edge off, drink a couple of beers and come back. But once I start, I cannot stop. Once I start, all bets are off. And I might be gone 6 hours. I might be gone 2 days, 2 weeks. I did that over and over and over again. I'd come to and absolutely despise myself. And so I'd have to start coming up with something to justify my behavior. And I'd pick a fight with my mom or my sister in my head, and I'd go charging in the door telling them how horrible they were and how could you do this to me. Just self-righteous and ridiculous. So I did these things over and over, and Mr. Sick and I tried to kill each other several times, And I finally got away from him, and everybody thought, she's away from him, she's going to be fine. Because he was my problem. If he would just go away, I'd be fine. And so I tried to straighten up a little bit. That got me some wonderful job, and I met Mr. Clean. And I'll just tell you that Mr. Clean, he, like, didn't park in handicap. He paid taxes. I mean, he was a really dull guy, you know. He wasn't all that excitement. He wouldn't fight back. I mean, it was just, you know. But anyway, I moved with him and where his family lived in Virginia, and I took my Stephanie there, and everybody said, here we go. She's going to be making casseroles, driving a minivan. Everything's going to be just fine. And I got up there with those people, and they were, they like baked together, the whole family, extended family. They'd all together, and they'd bake together, and they would play games and go roller skating, and he would drink 2 beers after work. That's it. There's no more to that story. He would drink 2 beers after work. And that was it. I mean, like, watch Jeopardy or something and eat their casserole and go to bed. And it was horrible. It was awful. Because I drink 2 beers, we better start. I mean, we got things to do. We're just getting started. And I tried to be what I thought normal was. I tried to fit in that world, and I broke me, and I broke drunk and violated the 2-beer plan, and it got ugly. But I called my friend from here, old faithful friend, and he came and rescued me from those horrible roller skating people in the middle of the night, and Stephanie and I came back. See, wherever we went by this time, that child and I had her little Sesame Street suitcase, and it was always packed and ready to roll because you never know what's going to happen. So we came back, and they were horrible people, and you wouldn't believe what they did to me. And I started running like I always did. Now, I had to find Mr. Sick again because I needed some excitement. And I can just tell you, it was just the same story over and over, different places, different jobs, different everything, but it was the same over and over again. And I was to have my second child, Sarah, and I just started dragging two through my craziness. There at the end, they got me one more good job. It was right across the street from this apartment they fixed me up in, and I was going to be Mother of the Year if I just listened to them. And I can tell you that I tried as good as I could, but I failed miserably at cleaning it up. And it got to where, I couldn't function in that work environment. So I would go home. It was right across the street, so I'm just going to run home for a few minutes. I got important stuff to do. I'll be right back. And anyway, I'd start drinking, and that was that. I quit responding when the daycare called to say it was time to pick up the little people. I just knew they were going to call my mother if I didn't respond because I just couldn't face those people till I got right. The problem is I never got right. It took longer and longer to get to where I felt okay in my skin. It took more and more alcohol to get there. And then, of course, I'd overshoot the mark, and it was a bad scene. Those women at the daycare were horrible, too. I need to report that. My list of the people I hated was just growing. And they were like these wholesome, nice people, too. There was this one woman in particular. I still remember her name all these years later. And I went in one morning, and I would just kind of try to shove them in the door and not make eye contact with those women. And she stopped me one morning, and she said, "Excuse me, Miss Apperson, do you know what today is?" And I was like, "Of course. But which one are you talking about?" You know. And she told me it was my daughter's birthday, and I was supposed to bring cupcakes. I hated myself so much, but I had to say it was her fault for some reason. That was a, you know, we're just going to quit our job and drink day. I mean, things like that just happened. And that's what I thought. I thought life happened to me. I really could not connect the dots. And I know it's probably really clear right now, and it is clear to me, but at the time I could not connect the dots. Nobody understood, and I felt so alone. And I was so angry, and I was so afraid, and so ashamed. I stayed away from the people who loved me unless I absolutely needed something, because I was ashamed. You know, when just all these crazy things. When Stephanie was a month old, she and I got arrested for some pesky felonies, and I tried to blame her. No, I'm joking. it was me. You know, I mean, just all these things happened, and anyway, the long and the short of that is it got worse and worse and worse and worse, and nothing I tried worked, and I tried all kinds of crazy things, crazy plans. I was always having a new plan. But there at the end, what I pray I never have to do again. I know I don't have to. But there at the end, you know, I decided that all my problems were because of him. And I don't know if y'all have ever had that syndrome, but if he would just go away, I'd be fine. As a matter of fact, if he were to die, I'd be fine. Now, please don't be afraid. I'm not going to hurt anybody. No. I tried to kill him. That was my big plan. I was going to kill him, and if he were to die, I'd be fine. I'd feel so much better. All my problems and pain would go with him, and so I was going to run him down in the parking lot. And I was incredibly drunk, and I had this great plan, and I was so excited because this was going to solve all my problems. And so I was waiting outside of the apartments that we lived in, and drinking a lot more and more and waiting, and he finally comes out, and I floored it. I mean, I floored it, and I was going across the parking lot, and I was going to kill him, and the problem is that little car wouldn't go. It was duct taped together and bungee corded, and it was crazy. Anyway, I floored it, and this kind of went, and he stepped out of the way. He had that much time. He just stepped out of the way, and I went rolling past him, and the worst part of it was he nudged his friend, and he pointed and giggled at me. That's the worst part, to laugh at me. And it was such a ridiculous thing, but I can tell you, I was so, so upset that night because I knew I knew what needed to happen. You know, some people just need killed, and he was one of them. And my big plan failed, and I was just so, so angry and upset and hurt. And I drank. I consumed everything I could consume that night to get rid of the pain, and the pain just got greater. For a long time, drinking would just numb the pain enough to survive. Just bring it down enough. And that night, it quit working. It got greater and greater. And I finally became willing, and I called my mother in the middle of the night. I had called her over the years and said, "Will you please get me some help here and there?" And by the time she'd get there, or they'd put a net over me or whatever, I'd say, "You know what? False alarm. I'm fine. I didn't mean it when I needed help. I got this. I got a plan." She had told me a few weeks before that she was done and not to call her anymore, and they were actually starting to do something about the children. But that night, I called her, and I asked one more time for help, and she said, "Please don't move." And she sent my brother to get me, and he took me back to her house. And the next morning, she put me on the phone with a woman who ran a treatment center. And I don't know. I guess I could just hear it in her voice. I was willing enough. I'd been in enough pain that I just did what that woman told me to do. She asked me if I could stay sober until I got there. I don't remember. A couple of days later, they had a bed ready for me, And she said, can you stay sober till you get here? And the first time in a long time I was honest and I said, I don't know. And she said, well, honey, why don't you ask God to keep you sober till you can get here? She didn't say, how do you feel about God? Is it okay if we talk about God? She said, why don't you ask God to keep you sober? And for the first time in a long time, all that defiance was gone. And I just said, yes, ma'am. And I followed directions. That was big for me, to follow directions, not to try to debate it or to expound on what I thought I knew. But I just said, yes, ma'am. So I went to that place. And I can just tell you that looking back, I feel like I crawled in begging for help. And what I found there were some women who understood, who didn't judge me. They were not cruel. They didn't look down on me. They loved me enough to tell me the truth, even if it hurt my feelings. And that was okay, because I was finally desperate enough to listen. What I got there was a foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous. I left there with this foundation. I left there with just the knowledge of what I needed to do. The most important thing was to follow directions. I found out finally that that's the secret to this thing for me, is just to follow directions. So I left there and I knew I had to ask God to keep me sober in the morning. I had to have a sponsor, a home group, worth the steps, and thank God at night. And I just tried my best to do the things they told me to do. And most of the time it was just watching my feet. All right, I got to get up in the morning. I got to pray. I got to take care of the short people. They told me I had to feed them and, you know, do all that stuff. And, all right, take care of them. You know, they told me some stuff you probably don't need to do. Okay, I don't need to. I can't hit anybody. I mean, you know, just one day at a time, one step at a time, just following directions. And that has saved my life, building that relationship with the God of my understanding. I saw it in them. I saw it in the way they interacted with other people. I saw it in their eyes. And I wanted so desperately to feel like they looked like they felt, if that makes sense. I want to be able to experience the grace that they showed, they carried, went through problems, walked through them with grace and dignity, and I respected that and still do. So I started trying to do this thing, got a home group, I got a sponsor, started working the steps. And, you know, I was really nervous. I had these little children here now. They have to start school and, you know, they have to go be around these other parents. And I was really nervous about the school business because those casserole women hang out at the school too. And I mean, they gather different places, and that's one of them. Those casserole women are there. These are like professional moms. And I don't mean moms who are professionals. I mean pro moms. Like, all they do is mom, and they know how to do it. They got handbooks, and I'll just, you know, I'm just like trying to not screw up. And I would take them to the school and walk in, and inside of me, I just knew that there was going to be an announcement. Attention, please remove your children. There's an alcoholic in the building. Don't look her in the eye. You know, I mean, I just knew they were going to figure out what I was again. But now I had tools. Doesn't mean I wasn't afraid, but it does mean that I had the tools, and I knew I could ask God to walk in there with me. I could ask God to remove the fear, just like I asked God in the morning to remove the obsession and desire for alcohol. Just like I asked God to remove my character defects and replace my words with what he'd have me say and be. So I had a new toolkit, and I got to use it. And one day at a time, that fear left. And one day at a time, I became the parent I never knew I wanted to be. One day at a time. Now, I'm not a casserole girl today, but I can tell you that I'm able to live amongst them and love them and respect them, and no longer do I have to live in fear or anger. So I started doing that. I'm working with my sponsor. I've got this home group, and I started learning in the home group that how to interact with people, you know, how to be one of a group and not have to be in charge. How I didn't have to be the best or the worst anymore. I didn't have to have all the attention. I could, like, I don't know, throw out what I thought at a group home, at a home group meeting, and then just listen and let God do his thing. And I was able to take those skills and transfer them to other areas of my life. See, I've learned everything I need to know about functioning in this life from Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I could take those same skills and take them to work with me or in my family. It's okay to be one of a group today. And I didn't know that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I always had to be the best or the worst. If I was in pain, my pain was the worst, and I'm going to scream through it and I need all the attention. And today I can be one among my family. I can focus on other people besides me. So I got married since I got sober. And my husband's in Alcoholics Anonymous, too. He's a wonderful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we were warned. They gave us a good warning when we started sparking. And, we were scared they're going to throw us out of AA. They could have docked our sobriety. We knew that. We were scared of the old timers. But they told us some really important things. They said, you know, Angie, you've got to have a God of your understanding, a sponsor, and work the steps. Bobby, you've got to do the same thing, and you can't do it together. You can't be his sponsor. He can't be yours. You can't be each other's gods. But if you'll both work the steps and live this program to the best of your ability, you can enjoy the benefits of Alcoholics Anonymous together. And we found that to be true. Now, we had to test those waters when we first got together because we knew more than the old timers. They tend to overreact. So we used to do things like an FBI tip line with each other's sponsors, you know. I don't know what's going on, but he's kind of crazy. You might want to give him a call. Thanks. Just ridiculousness, you know. First argument we got into, I don't remember what, but I mean real argument, where you're like smoking 15 cigarettes and tapping that foot. And he's walking up and down the hall pacing, and I mean, I don't know what we were mad about. We were both hot. He came flying in there, and it just happens to be the story I remember. I'm certain I did it plenty of times, too. But this is my story, and he's not here. He came flying in the room with his big book flipped open, and he said, I think if you'd read this right here, you'd be okay. So I got in my car and tried to run. No, I didn't. I didn't try to run him down. But it was not pretty. I can tell you, please don't try that at home. It was not a good scene, you know. But we had to learn one day at a time, you know, that if we're both walking in the same direction and we're both walking together, but we both have to do our own jobs. And we have, in fact, enjoyed the benefits of this program together. It's been God's grace. I've gotten to learn what it is to be a member of a family, what it is to be in a marriage, and just to build that true partnership with another human being that the big book talks about. And that's been an incredible honor. So we had this child together, the sober child. She's never seen either one of us take a drink. And she went to South Africa a couple of years ago to spend a year and experience some things and try to help God's kids. And it was through a church organization that she went, and they were interviewing her, and they were asking her about her spiritual background. And she talked a little bit about religion and the positive things there, but she said, you know, I just need to be honest with you. All that's great, and I've learned so much, but I have the relationship with the God of my understanding today that I have because my parents are both sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned there about a kind and loving God who wants me to help others. That blew me away, you know. She learned that from you guys. She learned that from being around Alcoholics Anonymous when she was a small person, and we were just trying to figure out how to get through the day without flinging a big book at each other, you know. That is God's grace to me, that my staying sober by coming here and being with you and trying my best to practice these things has helped to build her into the person she is today. That is God's grace to me. So, like I said, we've got these five daughters, and we don't even know who belongs to what anymore. They're just all ours. Today, we also have three grandsons and one brand new granddaughter. And I can tell you that I am a Gigi today. And that's not anything I ever knew I wanted to be, but it's the best gig I've ever had. It is. The best gig I've ever had is being a Gigi. I'm entrusted to be around these children and to influence them a great deal, and I'm so incredibly grateful. I never knew I wanted the life I have today. Never dreamed I wanted this life. The list of things I wanted, and I used to hear people say this, and I'm like, God, can y'all do anything but speak in bumper stickers? But I used to hear people say, if you make a list of what you want when you get here, you shortchange yourself. And that's absolutely the truth for me. I never knew that I wanted to have a career, to get an education, to be a mother, to be a wife, to be a Gigi, to be a daughter. All those things are so exciting and wonderful and fulfilling to me today. I thought life had to be about fireworks and all these craziness and always something going on. And today, my life is absolutely wonderful, and I'm honored to be a part of it. Yeah, I told y'all that I put my mother through a lot of things, and I have tried my best to make amends to my mother one day at a time. We did the formal amends thing, but I still try my best to be very aware of being the daughter that she deserves and being the daughter that I can live with being today. So in my family, my sister's a casserole girl. Don't tell her, but she is. She's a casserole girl. And we don't have it's not a formal contest, but at Christmas, you kind of look and see who got mom the best gift. You know, you kind of watch her reaction. A few years ago, I got her the best one. I won. I got her tickets to the symphony. She's so excited. So I take her to the symphony, and we go over to the Coliseum, and we get there, and we're walking through the parking lot, and I was like, Mom, I think we're a little overdressed. And she said, oh, no, we're not. I said, okay. Yes, ma'am, she knows these things, and I don't. So we keep walking, and we get up to the parking attendant, and I said, excuse me, sir, is this the right door to go in? And he looked at me, and he looked at my mother, and he looked back at me, and he looked so confused. I'm like, what's wrong, you know? And he spoke to my mother so kindly. He said, ma'am, if you'll stand right here, I'm going to sort this out. And he wheeled on me, and he said, where did you park your car? I said, it's over there. And he said, go get your car. I said, what's wrong? He said, you're taking your mama to the wrestling match. Oh, gosh. So, you know, I'm still me, you know. I'm still me, but, you know, today I can laugh at those things, you know, and we have laughed a lot at that. Today I'm able to try one day at a time to be the daughter that she deserves. My father passed away when I was about a year and a half sober, and he had been sick for a long time before I got sober. He would get sick, they'd call the family in, didn't think he was going to make it, and then he'd do better. And every time they called us in when I was drinking, they'd have to assign somebody to watch Angie, you know. Who's going to make sure Angie doesn't do something crazy? But when he got sick, after I got sober, I was able to make those amends, and he asked me to go with him to the hospital. They were going to keep him, do all these tests, and figure out what the game plan was. And I was honored that he asked me to take him. He asked me to be a part of that. And I went, and we got some bad news. They told him that the only thing that would save him was a heart transplant, and they told him that the odds of that were pretty slim. You know, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. All that came out, though, was what you guys gave me since I had gotten sober. And I talked about God's grace, and we prayed, and we talked about God's will and whatever, the strength and the courage and all those things that y'all taught me. And my father looked at me that day, and he said, I wish I had something for my life like you've got for yours. That was the same man that thought this thing was a joke, you know. He saw a difference in me, and all I was doing was trying my best to follow directions and put one foot in front of the other. But he saw a difference in me because I had been with you. I'm so grateful for that. He passed away, but I didn't have to scream through that and hurt other people and demand all the attention. I was able to walk through it with a little bit of grace and dignity that I've seen in the Women in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was able to walk through it and try my best to focus on what I could bring to others rather than what they weren't giving me. That is an incredible thing. That is God's grace in my life. I had my friend that I said that came and rescued us from those people in Virginia. That friend I had just used up, you know, drinking. I had just always very needy in relationships and always wanted this person to do for me. And when I got sober, I started working the steps. I had my amends list. My sponsor and I went through it, and we're doing these things, and we decided that's one I needed to make. So I contacted this guy's mom and said, hey, I'm ready. I'm sober, and I'd like to make amends. And she said, well, that's cute. We're glad you're sober. But the best amends you can make is to leave them alone. And I went back to my sponsor. I was like, she's not doing it right. It's not fair. I'm supposed to be able to make amends, and it's not, it's all about me. And she took me back to that book, like my good sponsors do. She took me back to that book and reminded me that my job was to stay willing, and that if it was God's will, he'd be in my path or I'd be in his, and I'd be able to make those amends. Every time I did an inventory from then on, that person came up, and I just prayed for the willingness and kept doing what I was supposed to do. When I was 18 years sober, I got a phone call, and it was his wife. I didn't know her, didn't know who she was, but she explained to me that he was dying, he had brain cancer, and he wanted to see me. I was able to go make those amends because I was sober and I was with you. That's amazing to me. It was on God's time and not mine. That is God's grace in my life. I have been able to repair so many relationships and build so many new ones. I've been able to do things I never knew I could and never knew I wanted to. There have been some hard times in sobriety. The last year's been kind of tough. This week's kind of tough. But I know if I continue to do what they taught me to do, put one foot in front of the other and follow directions, everything's going to be okay. Might not be fun, but it's going to be okay. God's grace is all around me. Sometimes it's just not what I think it should be at first. Walking through problems instead of screaming through is amazing to me. So I've been able to go to school, and that's been interesting because I had a lot of potential at one time. But who knew? That's something I love, and I'm a big old nerd, and I've been gone to school a lot, and I'm almost finished, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity and amazed that I've been able to do something again I didn't know would interest me. My sponsor is so important to me, and she's walked through a lot of things with me, especially in the last year, and I can tell you that she always reminds me to get in the book and to ask God to walk into things with me. And as long as I'll continue to do that and keep you guys in my life, I think everything's going to be okay, and especially the way it's supposed to be. You know, I've been called a lot of things in my life, a lot of things, and most of them were accurate. But I can tell you today, I'm a couple of other things. Today, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, we'll call it Gigi. I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm an employee, and I hope I'm a good friend. But I could be none of those things if I were not a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful to you for that, and I'm grateful for that too. Thank y'all.